It's not the size of the market or how solid the product is yet, because that can change over time. But it's really the purpose and passion of a founder who is eager to make a change. It's not, of course.
Welcome to the Mission Driven Show. Your host today is Sharon. Today I'm hosting Diana Kricher. She is an investor and entrepreneur and has more than 20 years of experience in building technology businesses, including startups, scale-ups, and enterprise. From B2B, B2C, nonprofit, and marketplaces, she has done it all. Not mentioning she's also an investor and a board member in quite a few companies. She's also a key player here in the startup ecosystem in the Netherlands. She co-founded the Dutch Startup Association. Their mission is to turn the Netherlands into a startup state while helping startups and scale-ups grow and be successful. She's also part of the Next Woman Crowdfund Investment Committee, which supports female-founded companies. And the reason that I'm hosting her today is because of her passion for purpose-driven tech for good companies. Welcome, Diana, to our show. It's a great honor to have you today, and thank you for joining.
Thank you. Love great. To be here.
Great. So I just realized your last name in English is Warrior, and you told me that right. Diana is also the goddess of being a warrior, the right? Hunt.
The hunt. Yeah.
And you're boxing.
Yes. So if you would only look at that, you'd probably think I'm only fighting all day, which is not. I'm a pretty sweet person on the side. But it tells something about the power or strength more or less that. But it's just names, eh? So.
No, but it's amazing to have this kind of energy in your name, right?
True. Yeah.
And it's while when I reading your CV, let's call it, I saw a lot of fighting, promoting startups and women in tech. And right? This is part, so it's correct. Part of personality, I guess.
Yeah, I think standing still is not a good thing. So progression means you have sometimes to fight for stuff, and fighting in the personal sense or in the positive sense, of course. I do believe that you need power and the drive to actually make changes, whether that's a startup, whether that's your relationship or anything you believe in.
Yeah, agree. And basically the reason that you're here today, because I think we both share a passion for purpose-driven organizations. And I want to learn from you and hear your stories about purpose. And my first question is, why purpose-driven and what does it mean for you?
That's a good question, because as a person, I'm not too fond of the word person.
Purpose.
But purpose. Yeah. There's more to the word purpose, obviously. And I think it's something that drives people from the inside. So it's an inner belief to do the right thing. And I think if you grow older, you experience a lot of stuff, and then you also develop in terms of your perspective. And so the last, let's say, 10 years, I've been working with entrepreneurs and investors and, all kinds of people and companies. And the common ground is that most of us really want to make the world a better place. And that sounds very corny. But I think if we all do our little bit of that, our little piece, it in the end will be like a rain or a storm. So I think that brings together a lot of power and to change stuff. That's needed. For me, this person, or this purpose-driven perspective is really coming from the inside. And then it's authentic and I think very powerful. If you combine that with a lot of people and interesting ideas and markets, you can actually change things in a better way.
And when did it start to think about purpose, or I don't know, maybe you have a different word for it that's more suited to your personality? How did it start, this whole thing?
I thought about that, and I actually think it's changed when I became a mom. So when I actually welcomed two sons in this world, it started, I think, a thinking process, what we leave behind if we've done our job as a parent. And what then lies ahead for my kids and their kids. So I think that accelerated the thought, but I've always been really strong on working with passionate entrepreneurs who want to obviously solve some kind of problem. So that by helping people is really in the nature, in my nature. It's been there since I was a kid. So, and that for me is true purpose, is if everybody tries to help somebody else, whether it's on a business or personal level, it's better for the whole. So I think it's always been there, but it's been, I would say, accelerated or strengthened by having kids and thinking more about your legacy, basically.
Yeah, that's interesting, because for me it's the same journey. I think it all also was there from the beginning. I was always care about justice. I don't know why. Maybe because I watched the wrong cartoons. As a kid, you know, trying to protect.
Probably watch the same ones then.
Yeah, and maybe, yeah, maybe it's culture. Like some people just watch it and say, okay, you need to be the good guy to save the world, you know, those kind of things. The same. I think when we have three kids, me and Shira, and and when before we had kids, I was thinking, okay, this is gonna, it's a little bit trouble if you understand where the world is going and you have some empathy and awareness. And I started thinking, I don't know if it's the right thing to bring kids to this world. I don't know if they will have a future. That was like 2012. We are together in the last 10 years. And I said, okay, I don't know what's going to happen. Something changed in my life. I don't know exactly what, but I said, okay, I don't know what the future holds. It seems like I need to do that. And I'm very grateful that we have three kids. And definitely it also changed my life thinking, okay, now they are there, out there in the world.
Yeah,
I have this kind of thing, maybe also because I'm from Israel, and you know, Holocaust stuff and you know, bad things. Yeah. And I always remember the bad things that humanity did, and some people choose to do different stuff, like save people, save kids, you know, fight, resist. And I want to be remembered as one of those people that if my kids will ask me, Papa, what did you did? You know what's going to happen. You know, you are intelligent. What did you do to save our future? And I want to have a decent answer. That's basically what drives me. And that's kind of a purpose, I will say.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's really something that's, you don't have to search for it. So there's people who say, I'm going to search for my purpose. And I think it is there. You maybe have to take some stuff from the surface, but I think it's there, and I think the way people treat that and or deal with it is different, and that's okay. You know, not everybody needs to do the same thing for this world, but at least do your smallest piece to make it better and leave something behind that's like your legacy, like you said.
Yeah.
When you talk to your kids, that there's something you've done that's not just making money or pretending to feel successful, but really that made a difference in at least one person's life. I think that's, you know, and not just your husband or wife, but a little bit broader than that. That's what at least what drives me and helps me stay sane as a person as well, I think.
I think that's also deep inside us after we accomplish to sustain our basic survival instinct. You know, we have food, we have shelter, there is no war outside, no lions, nobody's going to kill me. We start asking different questions as people. And there is a search for meaning, I will say, like, why am I here? What should I do with my time? I think that's one aspect that drives people to, especially Generation Z and Y, asking different questions. You know, when I join to this work, what's going to mean to the world? How it's part of my identity, right? And I think that's the search for meaning is becoming more important for people. And also, we're a meaning people. Like, when we look at the reality, the only way for us to understand it is to tell some kind of a story, what's happening, and the story explains what's true, what's false. You know, this is religion, by the way.
This is how in history stories were translated or used to translate, like, culture and values and beliefs. So you need those stories to pass that on, and then the new generation will add their stuff, their feelings, their beliefs. That's the beauty of it, you know. So I think a lot of stuff also comes together because we just can't continue only looking at growth in the sense that the gross national product is like the key of our wellness or our riches. So I think it's a natural force, and I'm happy that I'm still here to be part of that and to do my little piece. And all these entrepreneurs where I cooperate with are doing their piece as well. So I think this is how it works. It's more collaborative effort than I think it used to be, and I like that.
Yeah, and I watched a YouTube video lately, the channel that I'm following. It's called like Stories of Old. And this guy, I think it's a Dutch, by the way, he gives some perspective to great movies, Star Wars, or I think there is also Fight Club, like iconic movies. And the last episode, he talked about heroism. Or how do we reflect war in movies? And one of the things that he said was very interesting, that basically leaving a legacy, this is our way to escape death. Because if you're going to die and be forgotten, like, you never lived, basically. And
true.
We want to like transcend our own existence. And the only way is to leave legacy, and story is going to be told about us. So there is intrinsic material in our DNA that search and quest for meaning, stories, and purpose. And I think the future is all about that. Like, the company of the future, I call it Mission Driven. That's the name of our podcast.
Yeah.
Is about people say there is a problem, real problem. You know, it's not about adding another feature to buy faster on Amazon. There is a real problem out there that need to be solved. Otherwise, we don't have a future. I will use my best knowledge, resource, relationship, network, whatever, to solve those problems. And that's purpose or mission. And that's, I think that's the hour, the time to mobilize more people. And that's exactly why you're here, because I want to have more people like you saying there is a different way, you know?
Yeah.
Money is fine. There is not infinite growth, by the way.
That's it.
And we need to take into consideration other aspects.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like a waterfall approach, you know, adding brain power, resources, ideas, and then in my profession, technology, you have some amazing assets that can be used and in a scalable way as well. To really make a difference. And there are so many examples that are doing cool stuff. If you look at Patagonia, that uses really not just products, but a platform and a belief in how they operate. And that's such a different way than, for example, Amazon, which is, you know, serves a need as well. And this can be a revolution. It is going to be an evolution. So everything needs its time. But I think it's coming more together the last couple of years. And I even think that the COVID-19, we're fully in, of course, will definitely accelerate that.
Agree.
And the belief and the experience that only by collaborative effort and a mission-driven approach will help get us far beyond in the future.
I agree. And can you like explain what, because you're also an investor, right? And you're a board member. How does it look like if you take this approach when you invest, when you talk with founders, when you're on the board? Give me some examples of day to day. How does it look like to be a purpose or mission, or whatever you call it, as an investor or a board member?
I think it starts, at least for me, it starts with the founder and the problem that person is solving. So that's really for me the starting point. It's not the size of the market or how solid the product is yet, because that can change over time. But it's really the again the purpose and the passion of a founder who is eager to make a change. So obviously then if you've gotten to know the founder, or you already know the founder, which in my case has happened in the past a lot, so it's your relationship that's already there. If not, then you'd have to get to know the person, and not just the way the person manages the business or what their plan is, but who the person is. So for me, as an I would call an angel, a business angel, that is key, because I invest in the person, not so much in the company. That sounds weird, but if I would invest in a company, I would go to the stock exchange and, you know, buy some shares there. My personal belief is that you invest in a founder and an amazing idea where you really feel its problem is there and it needs a solution. So that is my perspective. And then I'll start learning more about their business and their market and their opportunity. And then only if I see I can add value besides just money, then I would be offering support or be open to come on board. Because I mean, people call that smart money, of course, everybody says that. But for me, all these startups I'm involved with, I also have some kind of involvement, whether it's just acting as a sparring partner or a shoulder or some ears, or your network or knowledge, well, whatever that is, that should be part of the equation for me. And that's why it's less of a formal, I would say, cooperation. It's not like there's a statutory right, a board of advisors in every company, because most of these companies are very young. But it's a combination of being able to add something that fits me, being able to learn something, because I want to develop myself as well, and being able to really help a founder basically turn their dream into a reality.
So what you're saying, so you're saying basically, if I will summarize in my own words, it's about relationship. It's about the problem and the people behind this kind of venture. And you invest the people and not the market. And I think it's also reasonable, even if you're not purpose-driven, because in the end, it's about people.
Yes, it is.
There is a lot of stories how stories begin with one product or market, and through iterations and learning, they change. Twitter is one of them. It was born out of internal communication tool of a failed startup. So it's about people and how passionate about them, about the problem. And I think what's unique about your perspective, that I never heard from investors, where can I help and add value? This is one. It could be common, but the more interesting, if I can learn from it. Like you see it as an exchange, and not just like, you know, I'm like a hierarchy. I'm an investor. I just put a money. Maybe I can advise and I move on. You are there to really build relationship, and learning is part of it.
Exactly. Because I believe every company is different. Every problem is different. So what would have worked for me in the past, in my experience, doesn't mean it works for that startup or for that founder. So it's just giving perspectives and showing there's more roads that go from A to B. But I truly am, I'm learning from these younger founders, sometimes older, but most of them younger founders. I'm learning a lot from them, how they approach problems, how they think, new technologies. So I think if that's like a synergy, that I would say that's probably the right word. I look for synergetic value. Mm-hmm. So I should be able to add something to them, but also should be getting something from them. And that's not necessarily return on investment. That's nice. And of course, that's if you invest, is that something that would be, well, cool for the future. But even if that would not be the case, that sounds really weird. But the founder has grown, has been able to grow the company, and in the end, it didn't work out. But we've tried it, and we've done all we can, and I've been able to be there along in that journey. I still would think of it as a successful investment, although just looking at it from a monetary perspective, it's not, of course. So,
That's very interesting.
Just a personal approach.
Because what you said, the impact of personal growth, it's on the same level of if you earn or lose money. Because if you're not grow, why am I there? If I grow or grew or learned something huge as a person, money is secondary. I'm not saying I'm going to lose money in intention, but no, the importance is the same importance, right?
Agree.
I think it's also the mindset of founders, right? Entrepreneurship. Like, I want to grow as a person first.
That's why I join in really early. So I obviously, sometimes it feels like I'm co-founder. That's on my resume. You also see some companies where I'm mentioned as co-founder, because it's really how I join in. There is an idea. There are founders. There's nothing built yet. And that's where I feel I can add some value. It is actually so I would say I'm a hybrid founder business angel person. So I think as an entrepreneur, and I invest more as a person, not as an investor.
You think it's like kind of an edge because when I see a lot of investors, majority, I think, are coming from banking, you know, money, managing money. Yeah. You rarely see somebody really build a company or several, I'm not talking, you know, and not just from the ground up, like doing the marketing, the sales, the product, dirty hands, you know, hands on. Do you see an edge as an investor that you have this kind of experience, and how big this edge?
And this is growing. I see it happily occurring more. There's even a smaller investment group that is a mix of previous founders or operators in big tech companies who now start to invest. So I think this is a trend. So I probably did it before it became a trend. And I think it's needed, because traditionally, and it's also aligned with the pure financial perspective on investing and building a company and building value. So the traditional approach of, let's say, venture capital investment or private equity is obviously it's just monetary. So it's very traditional. It's I put in X, Y, Z, and I want to return in 5 years' time. I want to have that amount tripled by five or six times, whatever. And most of the time, these investors call themselves very involved and experienced, and they will help in the business. And obviously with network, they can, and with money, they can. But I've experienced myself that it happens that there's investors who actually think they know how to run the company. And that's just not the case. It's so different to just be an advisor, stand on the side and then comment or
I agree.
Judge what's going on, than if you really have done it before in the past. You weren't able to sleep because you didn't know if you could pay your staff next month, or just to build something, you know, build technology. It sounds so easy, but sometimes it's not. So I think real experience helps these founders because they know they're not alone, and the things they fear or the things they are happy about or the things they want to learn sound familiar to me or similar people like me.
You know, it's also very reasonable. If you building a company, it's about meaning, purpose, a mission. And I totally agree, it's about relationship. Because you're not investing money just to get more money. You're here to solve a big relevant problem that you believe in. It's not a technical problem. It's a human problem. So it cannot be transactional and about money. You need to be part of it. It's part of your soul to also solve this problem because you care about it.
Exactly.
And that's different kind of investors. You know what? It's even different kind of conversations. It's about to get to know each other. And yes, exactly like you said, we're here to learn and grow. And if we have the right passion and we are smart enough, we're going to solve this problem. That's not the question here.
Exactly. And of course, you want to look at some business metrics because numbers will tell you sometimes more than just worries or thoughts. So, you know, it's not that I'm only doing it from a spiritual perspective or something, but it's really, I think that's also different when you're a private person investing than when you are a venture capital fund, and there's LPs backing you up, you need to justify. And so it is, you know, it's justified for the way they run their business. But I think if you're a founder and you're still in the scaling phase, there's so much value in working with experienced persons, not just experienced investors, but experienced people who've run companies themselves. That's more valuable, I believe, than just the money. And thank God with people I work with think about it in the same way. And that's really, really nice because actually today I joined a startup, Scale-Up actually, their board exactly in the way I just described. So I got to know the founder. She's a female founder, very experienced, solving a real issue in a very specific niche, a governmental niche. I helped her out a couple of times and that grew into this relationship. And now I'm formally in that board. So yeah, I really believe that's the way it works from both sides and not just, you know, look at me, I'm the expert and you need me. No, you know, it's a reciprocal, I think it's called. So it goes two ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me like fast fashion and slow fashion. It's like stupid money. I don't know what to call it, maybe stupid, but
yeah, exactly.
But it's fast.
Yeah.
We have a few meetings. Show me your deck. I'm going to ask you a few questions about your KPI. If it's going to look promising, I'm going to put money. But
yes, like, and if you show me your hockey stick Excel sheet.
Yeah. It's about growth. And but if you are around meaning, it's like slow fashion. It's about being sustainable and building relationship first and get to know each other. And it could take weeks or even months until you have, okay, we can help each other. It's like slow money, I will say. It sounds like the smart way to build a company.
It takes more time. It can take more time, not necessarily, but at most occasions it does take more time because you're trying stuff that hasn't been tried before. So
true.
You can be lucky and find something that really picks up quickly. But to my experience, most of these startups need at least one or two pivots to get where they need to be.
And yeah.
If you just look at it from a traditional perspective, that takes too long for the money to be returned to shareholders. So I think this way of working with smart capital and people that actually are an extension of your company, not that I'm not in the driver's seat. I don't want to be because I know how that works. If you're a founder or you're running a company, you don't want somebody in your back. But if you see it like on television, you have these helplines with these quizzes. Mm-hmm. I consider myself this like helpline you can use if you want, but if not, fine. But at least, you're getting something in return as well to be involved in the success, but also in the pain and the decisions they have to make.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, because I guess it's not all rainbows and, you know,
definitely
pink and unicorns. What are the struggles of going this path of thinking about purpose or mission? What are the things that people don't know about it?
I think it's because it's a new way of solving problems that have been there a long time, but some are pretty new. And most people just tend to look at those problems and opportunities in a very traditional way. So I think these, let's say, social entrepreneurs need to be aware and need to learn how to deal with the fact that the majority of our society is still based on, let's say, the old mechanism, the old economy. So that's sometimes a struggle. And again, I even worked with impact investors like venture capital funds that, well, I think they have the good intent and they invest in the right companies, but even their horizon on getting returns is pretty traditional. So I think that's one part. And I think it's always harder if you really want to do something different with an old problem, then you will run into different stuff than just doing the same in a different, let's say, identity. So I think that is one thing. The second thing is that because those people are really genuinely passionate about what they thought of as a solution, there obviously is also a high risk that these people in the end turn out burnout or anything else, maybe worse, because they're so passionate to make it successful that it becomes personal. And that's obviously different than potentially people who used to work in a corporate environment, try to pretend they are a startup and then find out, oh, this is really hard work and we don't make any money, and then they go back. So I think there's a difference in the sense that these social entrepreneurs would not stop. I mean, a nice example is, I've read it, I don't know the story firsthand, but this startup is called Peerby in the Netherlands. I think the founder pivoted 3 times and now only found a solid business model and got in an investment, but he didn't give up. Well, most entrepreneurs would probably give up the first or maybe the second time, but he didn't give up. So I think that is very different too.
So basically what you're saying is when you, and let me clarify, we're talking about social entrepreneurs, but the business model is about profit. It's not about saving someone's life.
Definitely,
lives.
Profit and purpose.
Yeah, profit and purpose. You're saying basically you're fighting a framework, a cultural framework, from investors to consumer habits to markets. You're going to meet a lot of resistance because the structure is not there yet. Like, we are not there yet.
Yeah.
The second thing that you identify that, and I can totally relate, when you're purpose-driven, it's become personal.
Yes.
And you need to have, like, if you compare a regular entrepreneur or even investor, when they are about purpose, you need to pay extra attention to your mental health because it's not an ordinary game that you are playing.
No, you put everything in it.
Yeah, you see the difference between the founders that... building a traditional, let's call it for now, make money, solve problems, problem solution, versus founders, investors that put their heart and soul and passion, because they're both a lot of effort and it's hard, right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
But you say emotionally it's different. That's what you're saying.
That's it. But it's the emotion, but it's also the level of sacrifice that the founder would be willing to do. So I've seen pitch decks in the past of young people, like former consultants who were doing a startup. Well, the concept was great, but if you look at, for example, a forecast, then there's like a base salary in there. That's just like, when you would work in a corporate and you would make after 5 or 6 years of experience. And they genuinely put that in a forecast for a startup that's raising their first round. For me, that's symptomatic that they will not be able to succeed. Not because they're not smart, but because of their mindset and their willingness to sacrifice. And I think this, let's say, purpose-driven founder would sell his or her house to be able to go and execute that new solution. So I think it's really a difference. And that, for me, is a distinction between the true entrepreneurs with a true purpose, true passion,
yeah,
and the wannabe startup entrepreneurs. There's so many out there, which is okay. You know, they are part of the ecosystem, but it's for me, I would not choose to work with those kind of maybe smart people, but I'd rather go for the one that really makes their heart tick faster if they talk about this problem and their idea and their concept.
And let's say I'm founder and it's a mission driven, purpose driven, whatever, and I'm looking for investment. From your perspective and experience, because it's not an ordinary, I'm not going to knock on VCs and you're a mission driven, like, although I must admit that lately Oatly raised $200 million from Blackstone, which was huge. A lot of people didn't understand this move, and you know, Blackstone, Oatly, how does it relate? And I read a press release of Blackstone, and they said, we are investing in Oatly because two reasons. One, it's a mission driven company. Second, it's about sustainability. Now, this is Blackstone, and this is like very, very weird that I think it's one of the biggest private equity in the world saying the future is about mission driven and sustainability. And that sends a signal to everyone, listen, that's where the money should go. And we need to find a way to collaborate. Even the, you know, the money driven organizations, you need to change perspective. So how does a founder invest? How do they find themselves? Because I think it's relatively rare, those kind of conversation. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, you have more experience. How does it work? If I need to get some advice, like, what should I do?
I think there are more and more like business angel networks that have these kind of criteria and approach. So that's one. And the second, I think it's really in your network. So if I look at, I'm involved in the Next Women, which is a network organization for entrepreneurial women. So I'm not a feminist. I do like to work with female founders because they tend to have a kind of modesty that not always is helpful in getting their idea across. So I really like to add some like conviction power to those founders. But most of, or a couple of the founders that I work with come from that network. So I really think it's with like-minded, and you have to go and look where the people that you feel would be matching with your startup, your idea and your need are there. So that's for sure not the traditional investors, but there can be like LPs, people who back up those funds who are interested in your solution. So most of the time when I went out to find funding, I really looked at the similarities in a profile. And if I did a cold outreach, it really was to trigger their interest in that problem, not so much in the pitch itself yet and in the company, but about the problem and their passion and their experience in that field. So I think looking for similarities and complementary stuff is the key, and that's not easy, because you know you're trying to find stuff that's similar and stuff that's different. So networks can definitely help in that sense. For me, at least, it's a big chunk of where I meet new people. The same when I was a board member for the Dutch Startup Association, I met a lot of people as well, and sometimes they're investors, sometimes they consider becoming an investor, sometimes they are founders. I think it's again the relationship, the network, the power of connecting to people that helps you find sometimes it's how do they call it? this really nice like this coincidence, like this epiphany or whatever word you use. It's a bit of luck. But I do believe you can influence luck.
So basically, it's like we said, it's relationship, and relationship happens in social environment. Network is a great example. And what you say, and I totally agree, it's about the prop. This is like the filtering. If you talk about the problem, there is a match. It's more important than the solution. And what I see a lot when we talk with investors or VCs is, okay, just tell me what you do. No, you need to understand the problem. No, what are you doing? And then I realize, okay, we're not on the same page. Exactly. Because the problem is, when you deal with those kind of situations, the problem is more important. And also, when you talk about the problem, you see if there is a similar views. Yes. If you talk about the solution, it's about money. It's about like features. It's about pricing or market.
Yes, that will call come later, you know, the traction.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Yes, it's less important than, do you have the same beliefs? Do you see the same opportunity and the problem?
I agree.
I think that's key.
I agree. And I totally agree what you said. It's about the network. It's about talking about the problem. And that's how you find like-minded people that could be a potential for this kind of and you know, for me, when I look at this kind of challenge, it's exactly like you said. And I think there is also a lack of space for investors and founders to find each other, and we have this kind of idea to solve it. But the thing is, that's why we started writing content, because we see mission driven and purpose, or whatever you call it, as a conversation and adding value. So we said, okay, let's open an app in our website for investors. Yeah. So we will talk about the problems. We talk about what are we doing and why. Not about the solutions, more about who we are, how do we think. And hopefully we can find people who believe in the same things. And that's also part of how we, and that's why you're here basically. Not as an investor, like as a person. We have the same beliefs, and we will add value to our network. And maybe some people will resonate and say, you know what, this is interesting. I want to join, or I want to invest, or maybe I can help, or maybe I can learn.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the new way, as I see it.
That's the waterfall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question. Where do you find inspiration? Because you've done a lot, 20 years helping startups, scale-ups, enterprises.
Yes.
Building stuff, you probably have seen a lot of failures.
Yeah, it's a combination of true. Yeah, that's where a lot of inspiration comes from too, to see what doesn't work and get inspired to learn from that and to do it differently. So that's one. I read a lot, whether it's articles, books, that helps. Just new, fresh, you know, perspectives. And most important on my list of where my inspiration comes from is actually from those founders, from stories, from people around in this ecosystem, and learning about the choices they made, the mistakes they made, the big bets they made, and also by doing it yourself. You know, it's if you're just looking at it from an investments perspective, then it's easy. But if you're really in it to help those founders, then it helped. Most inspiration came from experiencing the problems myself with how to deal with your staff and your organizational changes you need, growth plans, cash flow, all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's you know, being able to do it yourself, learn from it, and then learn from others how they've managed and coped and dealt with it. And I think it's the hybrid inspirational model I use. It's not one source or one thing I do or learn from.
Yeah. And which book do you really recommend people in this kind of path of mission and purpose to read? And you find this is like, you know, if you're in this kind of business, this is a must. What do you recommend?
I can't recall the title actually, but it's the book that the founder of Nike.
I read it. Yeah, I have it here.
It still resonates very well.
Shoe dog.
Wow. Okay.
Well, shoe dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That one. Mm-hmm. That's a very inspiring story and experience. And again, I read it a couple of years ago, but that's the first one that came to mind when you asked the question. Obviously, there's a couple of ones, like more business ones. I mean, I love reading the business model canvas. They have these awesome books.
Yeah.
And they have new ones every, I don't know, 6 to 12 months. But that's really to keep up with business models. But if you really want to hear and learn from founder problems, founder pain, resistance, persistence, and success, then you know that's an awesome book.
Yeah, I didn't read the Shoe Dog yet. It's here in my shelf. The one that I'm reading right now, it's from Patagonia. Yeah, I'm going to read it after what you said. I'm going to read it. The Patagonia founder, Let My People Go Surfing.
Yeah, it's one on my list actually. So if you finished it, I'll read yours.
yeah, no worries. It's like, I think it's a one-on-one really on, and I read a lot of books. I think I read something like 1,000 books and if we talk about sustainability and mission and purpose, this is one of the, I think the best book out there, because this thought process of Yvonne, the founder, is so different. And Patagonia is so different. So this is, I think, a must.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll read it. Thanks.
Yeah, go ahead. Thank you very much for joining our show. It was really amazing. Mind-blowing, I think.
My pleasure.
Yeah, to have a real person that involved in this kind of business.
With you about it.
Great. And I hope maybe we'll meet again in another episode.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.